finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
Okay. Okay.
Is it over? Is it over, Sam?
No, that's just halftime. We're at, that was act one.
Have you seen The Brutalist?
Not yet.
It's a good movie, but there's an actual, they built in an intermission, and I felt like that thing could be used.
Can you imagine if he came back out here and started all over again? It would be, I think I would die. Lauren, you have to unmute before you start talking. This is the year 2025.
Oh my God. I'm the youngest here and I can't unmute.
Hey, Lauren, it's nice to meet you.
Hey, how's it going?
So, okay, let's talk about that. I don't even know where to begin. That clocked in at well over an hour and 40 minutes. Longest, it's not a State of the Union. I'm going to call it a State of the Union. I don't give a shit. I'm going to call it a State of the Union. Longest State of the Union in history. It was a stem winder, generously. But, I want to be very upfront about it. And then so, because I think our Overton window shifts a lot with this stuff. And I think we just need to be very clear about this. It was a brutally dishonest speech. It was filled with complete fabrications, some of which had been almost recently debunked. It was highly partisan in a way that we're not accustomed to for these speeches. These speeches tend to be or should be or traditionally are efforts to unify the country. It wasn't even, I mean, it started with him mocking Democrats. So it wasn't even close to that. It was Trump. It was Trump. It was ego. It was him as a singular force. It was filled with dishonesty. Doesn't mean it wasn't effective. I want to be very clear about that because I do actually think, and we can get to this, the more effective parts, but it was Trump. True and true. Sarah, what are your thoughts?
Well, I thought there were some unifying parts. I do think we are all unified by the ritual humiliation of Marco Rubio. I felt like the whole room was there
for that. I was waiting for that. Yeah.
I gotta say, so I was gonna wait because I can tell you all the things I hated about it. Like, did I hate J.D. Vance's smug face throughout it? I sure did. Did I hate the fact that he somehow managed to talk about trans stuff far more than he talked about the cost of living? Which, yes. If you weigh, you know, the Americans' priorities, cost of living far outweighs any trans issues. I mean, he probably spent more time just on trans women's sports stuff than on cost of living alone. So,
yes.
Yes.
I mean,
those were his 100%. Guests too. That's who he brought to the gallery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could talk about Trump saying that right after he talked about how the guy who got shot and killed at his event, how that was sad, but Trump got saved because he needed to make America great again. Like, that kind of egoism. I find Trump repellent. I find, you know, the people standing behind him. Here's the thing though. Ha. Trump went for he created like happy moments. Like, he went for trying to create these moments of like the terminally ill kid that he is making part of the Secret Service and the guy who he got out of the Russian prison with his 93-year-old mother. Like, there were actually And in some ways, the way that a standard, you know, State of the Union goes, like, he does break through that with a certain amount of showmanship that I do 100%. Think if people who are, because look, I can't get used to how dumb he sounds when he talks. Like, I'll never get used to it. Oh, good. Then we got Joe Perdicone. And if you'd showed that to Republicans like a decade ago, like that speech, they would be like, and you're like, you're going to cheer like a maniac for this guy. Because that was something that was very much on like display, was how pumped Republicans were and how demoralized Democrats were. But if you'd showed them and you said, you're going to cheer like a maniac for this guy, they would have been like, never. Who is that lunatic? And what is he even saying? And yet, here we are. So anyway, I'll talk a little bit more about it. And I don't want to be such a downer by saying that I thought it was relatively effective, but I do think he did. There was a lot of showmanship that worked for him and his people.
Joe, while we have you, you are in the room.
Trump. I'm now in a tiny soundproof box in the press gallery.
All right. Well, give us the.
That's why it's the dark.
People have to understand the glamour of the job here. Yeah. What was like in the room?
This is like my eighth one of these covering in person across now four presidencies: Obama, Trump, Biden, now Trump again, and it was just like, it felt like one of those big tent revivals that they do in the South, where like every line he said, there was like a amen, yes sir,
right,
and like the praise.
So like a rally, then, I feel like that's like what every rally he holds feels like,
very much like that. And then like the Dems were either all super depressed or they just left. Like Bernie wasn't,
they were trying,
he just got up and he walked out. And you know, some of them that had like t-shirts, I think like probably the most awful moment was the first one with Al Green. I noticed Madeline Dean, when the Sergeant at Arms was making his way down the aisle to go over to him, she like tapped him, and it looked like she mouthed, "Don't hurt him."
Right.
And he was just kind of like, "Oh, I know, but like we have to get him out." And I was like, that was just like a very like low moment, just for a very, you know, a decreasingly effective body.
Joe, tell us quickly, what was Elon like in the, because he was sitting in the guest box and seemed a little bit out of place.
So he started by like every time anything happened, he stood up and was clapping and jumping, and he was staring at the lights and the ceiling and just kind of like moving around like he does. Same thing as the inauguration, but like more so. And then like, you know, after about an hour and a half, he was like slumped in his chair. And then when Trump mentioned Mars, he like leaned forward and was like, "Wait, what?" And then people started clapping and he was like, "Oh," and jumped up and was like, so, he had a like brief conversation before it started with Jason Selvig from The Good Liars. I like watched them meet, and there was like some sheriff who was there like as a guest in between them, like, what is happening? So we're going to try and find out what that conversation was.
I want to go quickly, because you talked about Al Green and Democrats and Laura, and you, this is sort of your forte here. But, you know, I was looking at Tim's Twitter feed, and I think, you know, I'm not trying to cut them any favor. I think Tim is right, though, that anything they did would look cringy. There's really no, I mean, this is
the ultimate position.
The ultimate home field advantage, right? It's like he's at the lectern. He's got, both his buddies behind him sycophantically clapping. There's nothing that he's going to say that they're going to clap to. And then there are also high expectations for them to try to create a scene without totally ruining the decorum. So it's really hard. So
yeah. Or Al happened? Green, you know, just like didn't want to sit through that. He was just like, "I want out. I'm old. I don't want to sit through this." No, I think like, look, if they didn't do anything, right? Like their Democratic base voters are already like pretty frustrated with the party that they're not doing more to fight back against Trump. So they had to do something. And yeah, I don't think there's any way to like, you know, all whatever you do. I mean, even when Republicans were, you know, heckling Biden during his State of the Union, like it just comes across as super performative and really cringy. It's like, you know, what can you do? But they had to do something.
Sarah, let me go back to you about this, because you've been doing all these focus groups. about voters and their changing sort of softening appreciation for Trump and the Trump voters who are getting a little bit frustrated with it. What do you make of his messaging tonight? I mean, we talked a little bit about how it went really for the culture war stuff, right?
Yeah.
Less so for the economics. And even on the eggs, it was sort of like, well, that was Joe Biden's fault, right? Like that was very notable to me. But really, it was just sort of the focus, right? It was so much culture war up front. He didn't even get into immigration until I noticed it. He didn't touch immigration until
it was late.
Yeah, it was like an hour in before he started to get into immigration, which was ostensibly his number one issue. So, I mean, as someone who's been sort of on top of all the focus group data, like, what did you make of the structure of the piece? And if you felt like he was communicating to win those people back who might be drifting?
Yeah, I mean, it actually struck me, your point about how he blamed Joe Biden for X, he blamed Joe Biden for everything, actually, yeah, when it came to the economy. And it seemed very much like they didn't want to talk about the economy that much because it's not going very well right now. And so I have a piece in The Atlantic right now talking about the focus groups. I own this publication. Why am I writing for other ones other than like their editors are more aggressive about making me do it? I don't know.
Sarah, I've been petitioning you to write a piece for weeks.
I know. Okay. I don't know what to say. Anyway, the thing is, and I want to make this very clear, the vast majority of Trump voters are like here for it. They want to drink liberal tears until they're, you know, thirst is quenched and it's not quenched yet.
They're and it's impossible quenched. To quench it. Yes.
Yeah. Right. And so, so that is most people. And they are, when Trump sort of in his windup, he was doing we've done more than most people do in 8 years. We've done it fast. And people are responding to that. Sam, the episode you did with me, we listened to voters say like, well, he's doing something. I can see action. But there's this other type of voter and it's not MAGA. It's not a MAGA voter. It's a person who is like, my shit's too expensive. I'm going to vote for Trump right, because I don't know. I don't really, people say a lot of stuff about him. I just think he's a businessman. And so like, right, I want him to do something for me, but those voters are deeply impatient. And so they're the ones that right now are being like, but is he doing anything on the economy? It feels like it's getting worse. And so I feel like that is who he's soft with. And they know that they're seeing that he has his worst numbers ever with voters on the economy, because the economy that ate Joe Biden is now eating Donald Trump. Right. Sebastian, you stop playing these videos.
No, we're gonna go to Alyssa Slotkin now.
Oh, we are.
She's delivering the Democratic response.
I'm gonna go down to Statuary.
You
go,
Sebastian, Joe. I'm sorry I yelled at you.
Sebastian, we love you. Thank you for doing that. Let's go to Slotkin.
Bye, Joe.
On 9/11, when the Twin Towers came down, before the smoke cleared, I knew I wanted to make a life in national security. I was recruited by the CIA and did 3 tours in Iraq alongside the military. In between, I worked at the White House under President Bush and President Obama, 2 very different leaders who both believed that America is exceptional. You can find that same sense of patriotism here in Wyandotte, Michigan, where I'm speaking from tonight. It's a working class town just south of Detroit. President Trump and I both won here in November. It might not seem like it, but plenty of places like this still exist across the United States. Places where people believe that if you work hard and play by the rules, you should do well and your kids should do better. It reminds me of how I grew up. My dad was a lifelong Republican, my mom a lifelong Democrat, but it was never a big deal because we had shared values that were bigger than any one party. We just went through another fraught election season. Americans made it clear that prices are too high and that the government needs to be more responsive to their needs. America wants change, but there's a responsible way to make change and a reckless way. And we can make that change without forgetting who we are as a country and as a democracy. So that's what I'm going to lay out tonight. Because whether you're from Wyandotte or Wichita, most Americans share 3 core beliefs: that the middle class is the engine of our country, that strong national security protects us from harm, and that our democracy, no matter how messy, is unparalleled and worth fighting for. Let's start with the economy. Michigan literally invented the middle class, the revolutionary idea that you could work at an auto plant and afford the car you were building. That's the American dream. And in order to expand and protect the middle class, we have to do a few basic things. We need to bring down the price of things we spend the most money on: groceries, housing, healthcare, We need to make more things in America with good paying union jobs and bring our supply chains back home from places like China. We need to give American businesses the certainty they need to invest and create the jobs of the future. And we need a tax system that's fair for people who don't happen to make $1 billion. Look, the president talked a big game on the economy, but it's always important to read the fine print. So, do his plans actually help Americans get ahead? Not even close. President Trump is trying to deliver an unprecedented giveaway to his billionaire friends. He's on the hunt to find trillions of dollars to pass along to the wealthiest in America. And to do that, he's going to make you pay in every part of your life. Grocery and home prices are going up, not down, and he hasn't laid out a credible plan to deal with either of those. His tariffs on allies like Canada will raise prices on energy, lumber, and cars, and start a trade war that will hurt manufacturing and farmers. Your premiums and prescriptions will cost more because the math on his proposals doesn't work without going after your health care. Meanwhile, for those keeping score, the national debt is going up, not down. And if he's not careful, he could walk us right into a recession. And one more thing. In order to pay for his plan, he could very well come after your retirement, the Social Security, Medicare, and VA benefits you worked your whole life to earn. The president claims he won't, but Elon Musk just called Social Security the biggest Ponzi scheme of all time. While we're on the subject of Elon Musk, is there anyone in America who is comfortable with him and his gang of 20-year-olds using their own computer servers to poke through your tax returns, your health information, and your bank accounts? No oversight, no protections against cyber attack, no guardrails on what they do with your private data. We need a more efficient government. You want to cut waste? I'll help you do it. But change doesn't need to be chaotic or make us less safe. The mindless firing of people who work to protect our nuclear weapons, keep our planes from crashing, and conduct the research that finds the cure for cancer, only to rehire them 2 days later? No CEO in America could do that without being summarily fired. Okay, so we've talked about economic security. How about national security? Let's start with the border. As someone who spent my whole career protecting our homeland, every country deserves to know who and what is coming across its border, period. Democrats and Republicans should all be for that. But securing the border without actually fixing our broken immigration system is dealing with the symptom and not the disease. America is a nation of immigrants. We need a functional system keyed to the needs of our economy that allows vetted people to come and work here legally. So I look forward to the president's plan on that. Because here's the thing, today's world is deeply interconnected. Migration, cyber threats, AI, environmental destruction, terrorism. One nation cannot face these issues alone. We need friends in all corners, and our safety depends on it. President Trump loves to say peace through strength. That's actually a line he stole from Ronald Reagan. But let me tell you, after the spectacle that just took place in the Oval Office last week, Reagan must be rolling in his grave. We all want an end to the war in Ukraine, but Reagan understood that true strength required America to combine our military and economic might with moral clarity. And that scene in the Oval Office wasn't just a bad episode of reality TV. It summed up Trump's whole approach to the world. He believes in cozying up to dictators like Vladimir Putin and kicking our friends like the Canadians in the teeth. He sees American leadership as merely a series of real estate transactions. As a Cold War kid, I'm thankful it was Reagan and not Trump in office in the 1980s. Trump would have lost us the Cold War. Donald Trump's actions suggest that in his heart, he doesn't believe we're an exceptional nation. He clearly doesn't think we should lead the world. Look, America is not perfect, but I stand with the majority of Americans who believe we are still exceptional, unparalleled. And I would rather have American leadership over Chinese or Russian leadership any day of the week. Because for generations, America has offered something better. Our security and our prosperity, yes, but our democracy, our very system of government, has been the aspiration of the world. And right now, it's at risk. It's at risk when the president decides you can pick and choose what rules you want to follow, when he ignores court orders and the Constitution itself, or when elected leaders stand by and just let it happen. But it's also at risk when the president pits Americans against each other, when he demonizes those who are different and tells certain people they shouldn't be included. Because America is not just a patch of land between two oceans. We are more than that. Generations have fought and died to secure the fundamental rights that define us. Those rights and the fight for them make us who we are. We're a nation of strivers, risk takers, innovators, and we are never satisfied. That is America's superpower. And look, I've lived and worked in many countries. I've seen democracies flicker out. I've seen what life is like when a government is rigged. You can't open a business without paying off a corrupt official. You can't criticize the guys in charge without getting a knock at the door in the middle of the night. So as much as we need to make our government more responsive to our lives today, don't for one moment fool yourself that democracy isn't precious and worth saving. But how do we actually do that? I know a lot of you have been asking that question. First, don't tune out. It's easy to be exhausted, but America needs you now more than ever. If previous generations had not fought for this democracy, where would we be today? Second, hold your elected officials, including me, accountable. Watch how they're voting. Go to town halls and demand they take action. That's as American as apple pie. Third, organize. Pick just one issue you're passionate about and engage. And doom scrolling doesn't count. Join a group that cares about your issue and act. And if you can't find one, start one. Some of the most important movements in our history have come from the bottle up. In closing, we all know that our country is going through something right now. We're not sure what the next day is going to hold, let alone the next decade. But this isn't the first time we've experienced significant and tumultuous change as a country. I'm a student of history, and we've gone through periods of political instability before. And ultimately, we've chosen to keep changing this country for the better. But every single time, we've only gotten through those moments because of two things: engaged citizens and principled leaders. Engaged citizens who do a little bit more than they're used to doing to fight for the things that they care about, and principled leaders who are ready to receive the ball and do something about it. So thank you tonight for caring about your country. Just by watching, you qualify as engaged citizens. And I promise that I and my fellow Democrats will do everything in our power to be the principled leaders that you deserve. Good night, everyone.
Okay, I know I'm reading the responses in our chat and people are not like overly moved by it, but really? I actually thought that was pretty good.
I mean, granted,
relative to the like, baseline of what a response would
usually
be.
Usually these things are bad. I mean, the goal is to just not end up on SNL this weekend, which she cleared that bar. But I think she's one of the more like effective communicators in the Democratic Party, especially on issues like democracy, which is like such a challenge for them to talk about in a way that just doesn't sound so overbearing. I thought she did a good job about that there. And on the economy too, I don't know, like in a way they're setting up for, it kind of reminds me of how we were with Biden just a few years ago, right? Like the Biden White House trying to tell people, just stick with my plan. Everything's going to be okay. And she's right. Kind of like framing it that way. Like Trump might talk a big game about the economy, but like, that's not what you're feeling right now.
I liked her ideas. She had, you know, what was it, like four, you know, pieces of advice for what to do going forward. You know, these speeches are so 30,000 foot and unrelatable often, but by doing that, she actually seemed to be communicating directly with people who, clearly Democratic voters are struggling to figure out how best to channel their action. She was giving them concrete suggestions. I would suggest doom scrolling is one of them personally.
It works great for me.
Especially if you're on the Bulwark and you're just checking out our feeds and subscribing, it's a great way to get through the day. But I don't know, Sarah, I mean, the bar is so fucking low, like she didn't do a Katie Britt, but beyond that, I actually thought that was a fairly effective response.
Yeah, I mean, look, the responses really only get attention when they're terrible. Like the things that are memorable about the responses are like please, somebody get Marco Rubio a glass of water. Like, what is wrong so with Katie Britt? Is she having a stroke right now? And then, like, whatever was going on in these other ones, like, we don't remember them because they were just, like, perfunctory.
There was the weird Bobby Jindal one where he was walking through his home.
Oh, yeah, Bobby Jindal. See, like, this is the thing, though. These are career killers. Like, people, I mean, Marco Rubio, I guess, did okay, but a lot of people
recover. It took him a while.
He recovered be richly humiliated at tonight's speech.
That's right. Yeah, recovered. I do think that here's what I think happened tonight for Alyssa Slotkin, which is I think that Democrats are looking for some leaders. And I think that they probably look at her tonight and was like, well, that was good. Like, that felt solid. Yeah. Maybe you should talk more, Alyssa Slotkin from Michigan, who had a Republican dad and a Democratic mom and seems to embody something sort of decent. And actually something Lauren said, I think, is really true. You know, I, much to the annoyance of my friends in the democracy sort of space, I'm constantly talking about how Americans don't care about democracy qua democracy, right? And so if you want to tell a better story about a democracy, you need to tell a better story about America. Like, it's always been really about saying, like, why is America great? And tapping into something that people kind of have the sense of, like, well, what is democracy? It's like this thing that we do here in America. And she found that, like, Democrats have talked a lot about democracy and yet not found about America.
She reduced it to, quote, Trump would have lost the Cold War.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the line, right? Like, there was a very easy way to talk about democracy. Like, he would have, you know, surrendered to Russia.
Well, the people who think Liz Cheney lost the election for Kamala Harris, which, boo, that piece of analysis, they're not going to like the whole lionizing of Ronald Reagan from that Democrat right there. But for people like me, you know, I'm
Let's go back to Trump quickly, because obviously way more attention is going to be on him, rightfully so. He's the president. I think if there were places where I think there might be weakness, and I think we're generally in the same boat, right? We think that it was an absolute smorgasbord of lies and partisanship, but probably did the job that he wanted to. But there were a couple places that I think ultimately there might be some weak spots. One for me was when he was addressing the farmers and anyone else who was going to be affected by the tariffs. And he was like, maybe a little bit of adjustment period. Like, I feel like that line might come back to potentially haunt. A little disturbance, but we'll be okay with that. You know, that one could be shared.
Go have fun.
Go have fun, farmers. Have fun. And then the second one was Social Security. Now, look, the Social Security section was 3 minutes of just absolute lies. It's been debunked. We're not paying 150-year-old Social Security benefits. It's just the way it's accounted. But him getting up there and talking about Social Security in the context of cutting it, whether you want to say it's for fraud or not, is not the easiest tightrope to walk. And Slotkin, in a way that no one else has done, did bring up Elon Musk calling Social Security a Ponzi scheme, which he did do live on Twitter. And that's not something that tends to end well for Republicans.
On Joe Rogan.
Sorry, on Rogan. Yeah, you did watch that. You watched
come
the
3 on,
hours.
Come on. Don't assign me to Joe Rogan if you can't quote it properly.
So that, to me, the Social Security thing, I think is going to be, you know, that's the soft underbelly here.
Yeah. And I mean, she clearly went after Musk pretty hard too, like even just as strongly as she did with Trump. So I think Democrats clearly view the Social Security and Musk and all the firings with Doge as kind of this soft spot for Trump and Republicans.
Right.
You know, and like we've been talking about this with a lot of the Doge stuff too. Like, it's not just people that in DC that are feeling it in terms of losing their jobs, it's people all around the country. And I think that they view that as something that they can totally tap into over the coming months.
Well, Sarah, you and I have talked about it. And the question, I guess, it keeps coming back is like, is it worthwhile to focus your fire on Musk and let Trump skate a little bit by doing so? And I don't know. I think you could do both.
I think this is a weird thing that people do. I mean, maybe what we have to do is like benefit Trump and Musk, and we'll call them.
What would
like,
that be?
Mump, I think.
Tusk.
Oh no.
Trusk.
Oh no.
Mump.
I don't like any of those. They all make me really uncomfortable.
I do think, I mean, I think it's DeLon. Important.
Okay, so I'm gonna stop.
I think it's good to tie them together. I think that Trump sees Elon as a heat shield. I think Elon can be a bit of a heat shield. He is, in fact, the unelected bureaucrat that we are was being crazy. Told.
That was fucking nuts when they're complaining about unelected bureaucrats. Apparently a bunch of Democrats in the audience were like pointing at him, being like, no, he's right there. Yeah. Sorry, go on. I interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I really don't think that there's any reason why you can't go after both of them at the same time. And also, anything that's bad for Musk is going to be bad for Trump. The only thing that is that you could say is like, oh, well, if it gets so bad for Musk, then Trump can cut him loose. Let that happen. And let them have that fight. That feels like a good place to be. So I don't understand. People get this like paralysis by analysis where they like, ooh, who do we go after? I'm like, just do it. The thing I do want to say though about the speech, going back to some of why I was sitting there being like, ugh, this is sort of effective, is like the part where the speechwriters could basically just take the night off because they just kind of crept from a bunch of old rally speeches. But they did this part in the middle around USAID spending where they just did all of the, oh, here's all the silly things and I'm going to like mispronounce the name. Who's heard of any of these countries? Yeah. I do think that's pretty effective for Americans. Yeah. Like it just is. Americans are like, and it doesn't even matter sort of left, right, and center. Like people are like, why are we doing these things in other countries? I don't want to. I want to help people. And like, I thought that was an effective part too.
Slotkin like kind of addressed that. Like she tried to say in Slotkin's response, like, we're all for reining in, you know, no one wants there to be abuse in the government. No one wants the government to be ineffective or inefficient. But I agree, Sarah. I thought that was one of the strongest parts of his speech, and also something that you can totally see just like popping off online. And millions of people who do not tune into the speech tonight are going to see that, and they're going to remember that from tonight.
You also have to be super plugged in to be like, wait, no, it's not transgender mice. It's transgenic mice. And like, that's totally different. And it's like, and then also AIDS, male circumcision in Mozambique, like what the fuck? It's like, no, it's actually to like stop the spread of deadly infectious diseases and sexual transmitted diseases. And like, this is bait. I mean, honestly, it's just bait. And they do it very effectively, right? Like there's merits for all this stuff, but they would love nothing more than to have their opponents be like, actually, we should spend, you know, $50 million on this stuff. And it does matter. And like, you know, there's a reason they went after USAID first. Let's put it that way. There's a reason they went after USAID first. And Democrats, you know, maybe they could have prepared for it better. The foreign policy community obviously could have prepared for it better. But ultimately, this was like the easiest layup of a fight for them. And they frankly have won it, right? Like that's just the fact.
Speaking of foreign policy a little bit, I got to tell you, I was relieved. I thought he might pull out of NATO like in this speech.
Yes.
And instead, he read that Zelensky letter. What do you make of that?
Well, he didn't say he signed the deal, but it did to me was a huge, put it this way. If you actually are supportive of the U.S. not abandoning Ukraine, like this was about as good as it could have gone, right? In theory, he could have gone up there and be like, we're done. Not a single cent more for Ukraine. He did say that. He read the letter. He didn't say he's going to sign the deal, but he read the letter. He was appreciative of it. He did have to temper it by saying he also wants to talk to Russia. It's like classic Trump. But in terms of foreign policy, I mean, foreign policy was such a small portion of the speech.
For a second, I didn't even think he was going to get to it because it was like, what? Like,
well, yeah, because we were in hour 30.
And I was like, it's time.
I'm ready to give up on the speech. He did talk about Greenland and Panama and then the Afghanistan withdrawal, which he said, I supported getting out, just not the way. But I thought the Ukraine stuff, to your point, Sarah, it could have gone totally sideways. And that suggests to me that there is hope for some sort of salvaging of whatever it is that they're trying to do.
Yeah,
but it's clearly not his central focus.
It was gross in the sense that basically Zelensky gave Trump the optics moment he wanted. That was like a bit of sort of not groveling exactly, but like he gave Trump exactly what he wanted to read out loud. I find disgusting the way obviously that Trump treats Zelensky. But I think I don't want the United States to abandon Ukraine. And so I was sort of glad. And I thought he might be like, we're pulling out of NATO. We're, you know, Europe, you're on your own. And like, so none of that happened. And I'm glad about that.
I wouldn't be surprised if we get some reporting about how the speech came together. like people saying, you cannot say that. Get that out.
As he was walking into the rotunda.
Sir, Mr. President, I might not be smart. All right. This one night has gone way too long already. Let's wrap this up. With not a prediction so much as a reality check. These things to me can be overanalyzed in the moment as having, you know, great significance. And ultimately, I challenge either of you to remember one line that Joe Biden said. Maybe Biden's not the worst, best example, but one line from any of these speeches that kind of stands the test of time, other than Bill Clinton, the era of big government's over. Will this have any sort of lasting effect? And by lasting, I mean more than just a week, Lauren.
No, I don't think these things ever do. I mean, if you think back to like the last State of the Union, which was Biden, which was like this big moment for him to show that he was alive.
He was back.
And that didn't really work out well for him. So these things, you know, really don't, they don't matter that much.
Yeah. Sarah?
I went on TV the next day after the Biden thing and I was like, this is going to be the beginning of the Biden comeback. I was so desperate for him to like be on his toes. But here's the thing, and this is why it's like, ugh. I don't blame Democrats for being annoyed or, you know, wanting to shout at the lies. But like, what do you remember about Joe Biden's speech? You gave Joe Biden his best moment by Marjorie Taylor Greene shouting at him and him being able to sort of parry back and forth. And Trump, you know, it has that sort of like, what's the wedding singer when he's like, well, I have the microphone and you don't. Right. Like he's got the podium. He's commanding the room. And like, it's a tough spot for Democrats. And I think like what's going to get played up tomorrow are like some of the feel good moments that Trump did that he sort of staged effectively. And then the Democrats behaving badly. And like, I don't wish that to be the takeaway, because the takeaway should be everything he said was a lie, basically. But I think, I don't know, it was more effective than I wanted him to be.
It was effective. I think we're all sort of on the same page here. He's very good in the showmanship elements of the presidency.
Yeah.
He's very good at lying, frankly, and getting away with it. And ultimately, I don't think this ultimately matters, because tomorrow we'll either see the stock market continue to fall because of these tariffs, or he'll come with some half-baked deal for Canada and Mexico, and that'll be the story.
And that's Just one last thing that just really hacks me off about this, though. Like, the way that Republicans were this is like North Korea-level shit. Like, the way that they're
The JD stuff behind him was unreal.
They're just all like, it's not.
I want to cam on, like, Nancy Mace for the entire thing.
They love this shit, though. I mean, even during the tariff stuff, I think it was reported only three of them were not clapping for the idea of reciprocal tariffs. Even though, to a person, they would all say, we don't support the tariffs, but they were just clapping for it. It's party personality. All right. Thank you guys both, mostly to our people in the comments. Apologies for not getting to your questions, but it's late, and we had to sit through about an hour and 45 minutes of Trump. Thank you for tuning in. We do generally appreciate it. We try to do these things to at least give you guys some quick insight into how we view these events. And as always, do subscribe to our YouTube feed. Stuff like this pops up. We have a lot of stuff on the feed. It's a great place to get good material from the Bulwark. Lauren, Sarah, thanks for enduring this with us. Really appreciate it. We'll see you all later.
Bye, guys.
Take care.
See you guys.
Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look amazing. What have you been doing?
You've heard of Ozempic, Wegovy, and other GLP-1 medications, right? Well, if you qualify, Zelda providers can prescribe semaglutide, the same active ingredient, at up to 90% less without insurance. Done all online.
No wait at the doctor's office or pharmacy?
No wait. Zelda can ship the same active ingredients as other expensive GLP-1s to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's the same active ingredients in Wegovy or Ozempic, but for 80 to 90% less. That's #250 keyword care.